Hello everybody, Merry Christmas, a very happy new year, and welcome back inside the Shark Tank as we catch up on a couple of games for sale over the holiday period, and we swing from one end of the spectrum to the other with the two that we're talking about today. We have, of course, that defeat just before Christmas away at Newcastle Falcons, 20 points to 14, and then the last match that Sale played just before New Year's, the complete opposite type of performance, beating the reigning champions, Leicester Tigers, 40 points to 5. So joining me to kind of make some sense of what's been a pretty interesting 10 days or so for Sale is my co-host, Alex, and my other co-host, James, will be joining us shortly. So Alex, first of all, Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year. We'll go chronologically and we'll start with that Newcastle game. But can you summarise the last sort of 10 days for us from a Sale perspective?
Yeah, thanks, mate. Merry Christmas and Happy New Year to you too, and to everyone listening. It's hard when you look at both results because all of a sudden the Newcastle result doesn't quite feel like the disaster it maybe could have been. But to be fair, I think even at the time, the Newcastle result, we all thought we were going to struggle against Newcastle. I think we differed on whether we were going to get the result, but we all thought it was going to be a tough test. And we just seemed to run out of steam in that second half. And I think there's a lot to analyse with the performance and the kind of the execution on the day. But just holistically, coming away from that game with a losing bonus point was not the end of the world, I don't think. It's certainly not what we wanted. It wasn't great. But I think we were, you know, on such a short turnaround. Newcastle had had a much easier kind of set of fixtures, despite the fact that they got battered against Cardiff. They obviously were much better rested, prioritising the Premiership and kind of deserved to win, definitely. But I think, given we knew how tough it was going to be, it's frustrating because we should have won. But I think that then got made a lot better by the fact that Saracens and Quinns both lost their games in that round, didn't it? So it all of a sudden didn't quite look as bad because Saracens hadn't extended their lead like we thought they would. And actually, the league position ended up in not too dissimilar a place. I think that Newcastle game, and obviously we'll come on to talking about the Leicester game, but the Newcastle game for me was one of, I sort of expected this to happen, so I'm not that disappointed. We've got a point out of it. Let's just, yeah, get away for Christmas, reset, and come back for the Leicester game at home. I don't know whether you differ on the basis that you thought that we definitely should have been winning that game, because you know, and it's a very fair point to make that it's a very poor Newcastle side compared to the ones we've gone and played previously. You know, they've managed to put one of their better performances in. But really, we were 14-0 up in that game. So when you actually go into dissecting it, despite the fact that I'm saying, oh, I'm happy with the point, to be 14-0 up at half-time, score no points in the second half and lose the game, is actually a pretty, pretty shocking way to kind of nearly finish the year. So I think it's a good job that what happened against Leicester was so positive, because that second half against Newcastle is just, it's not unforgivable, but as a professional, you're really disappointed to be two scores up at half-time and come away losing the game, aren't you?
Yeah, I mean, this is the thing with that Newcastle result. I remember, obviously, on our last podcast, I was pretty adamant that I thought Sale were going to win handedly because this Newcastle team doesn't offer a lot of threat. And I think, I should say a lot of threat holistically, because individually they do have some very talented players, obviously. And I think that's the frustrating thing with that Newcastle result is when you look over the course of a season, there's always going to be some banana skin games. Obviously, Saracens losing, you know, in the manner they did. You've seen, you know, certain teams get upset by others. Every team, including, you know, ourselves this year, have had a couple of games where you look back at it and say, they shouldn't have lost that, or they should have done better there. So over the course of the season, like, that's absolutely fine. I think the problem is with the result against Newcastle is it's, like you said, you were, you know, two scores up at half time. You were sort of in control of the game, and then you kind of lost it. And you know, Newcastle wrestled some momentum back, and we certainly weren't firing on all cylinders. And you go back and look at everything holistically and say, well, actually, that's a game that we should have won. And although we can bake in a couple of banana skin results over the course of a season, as can any team in the Premiership realistically nowadays, that's not a banana skin result. That isn't a case of we just came out flat and Newcastle were all over us and they put in the best performance of the season. That's a game that where we were in control and we should have won that. And I think that's less forgivable than, to be honest, if we just didn't show up on the day. And you look at maybe some of the players who were playing, you know, Sam Hill and Ryan Mills as our centre combination, you know, a rare start now for Jono Ross and Ross Harrison. You can kind of see that, you know, maybe this wasn't our like top end team or whatever. So the idea that maybe we just couldn't put it together and we weren't firing, that's fine. It's the fact that we ultimately were still pretty good and we still should have won that game that we didn't. That's why it stings so much. But then you see the performance we put in against Leicester the week after, and it speaks to just how competitive this league is to an extent, but also just how good we can be on our day. And just how poor we can still be on our day. And I think that's the worrying thing when you look at the last 10 days altogether, which is, you know, the best teams in this league, the teams that are going to go on to win consistently, are the ones who can win consistently. They're, you know, Leicester last year would just win every single game. Saracens this year have only lost once. Whereas we've, in the space of 10 days, put together one of our best performances of the season and one of our worst performances of the season, but also lost a game that we should have won as part of that process. So it's quite difficult to kind of pull together. And it's left me a bit, not pessimistic, but a bit frustrated that we've found a way to lose from a winning position against Newcastle and then put in a performance against Leicester, which makes that Newcastle game completely irrelevant. Because of just how good we were, so it's a really hard one to unpick. But I guess then, Alex, when we talk about that Leicester performance, just superficially at this point, I guess to your mind, does that result kind of negate any concerns you might have had about the team after that Newcastle game a week ago?
Yeah, it's a really good question. I think that frustration, that's the word for it, because you, as you say, you look at us against Leicester and go, well, if you can do that to Leicester, why on earth couldn't you, you know, hold on for a second half against Newcastle? And obviously it's completely different teams that you're playing. Obviously we had slightly different lineups ourselves, you know, different conditions, just a different mentality being away from home 2 days before Christmas. Obviously, the Newcastle fans are right up for it. Our fans were right up for it. So I think there's a bit of that factor in as well. Like, obviously, we had a really good crowd for the Leicester game, which I do think helped and gives you that sort of boost. So it's the frustration that is the main emotion, I think, when you're thinking about both games in tandem. But yes, generally, I still think that Leicester performance just made you go, oh, well, this is how we can play. I think we know that we're quite inconsistent and we're capable of a bad performance. And we always, as Sale fans, we're a bit pessimistic. And we always think it's coming in the next game, don't we? We know there's going to be one at some point that is just not going to be great, which is, I think, where Sarries are so good. And no other team is really able to do this. So I don't think it's a massive sort of blight on us. But Sarries are always going to put in a very, very good performance. And if they're beaten, they'll be beaten by a team playing at their best. And, you know, if Sarries fall off and don't play that well, they've just got so much quality that they're still playing a good brand of, well, not a good brand of rugby necessarily, depending on your viewpoint, but they're certainly playing a good quality of rugby and their base level. Their floor is very, very high. And I just think we're not quite there yet. We're not mature enough as a team. You know, when you look at, say, Sarries in that example, they're just picking people off. You've got, you know, Jamie George, Mako Vinopola, Billy Vinopola. You've got experienced internationals. You've got Sean Maitland and Max Malins on the wing. And what we've got is a very, very talented team with some very good people throughout. But I think there's just less experience. You know, you've got Aaron Reid on the ring, for example. You've got, obviously, we had Luke James at fullback coming back from injury. But, you know, even then, it's Luke James or Joe Carpenter. You've got Gus Waugh at nine. And they're all really, really good players for Sale. And they're playing superbly. But, you know, when the going gets tough and you've got to call on those reserves, if you've been on, you know, four or five international tours, you've done a Lions tour, you've, you know, been beaten up and battered, you've been in Premiership finals, you've been in Heineken Champions Cup finals, that's something you can then apply to a Premiership game away at Newcastle. And I think we're just on that journey, aren't we, I suppose? So I think there's still a lot more to come from this squad. In developing that ability and that kind of trait. But, we're going about it the right way. We're second in the league. We're playing well. We're doing okay in Europe. I think there's plenty of reasons to be positive. And that Leicester performance just shows the, you know, we're not letting bad results define us this season. We're bouncing back and you're seeing the reaction on the field every time we play poorly the week before. Even whether it's a win or a loss or whatever, if there's a poor performance 1 week, we're bouncing back the next week. And then I think crucially, we're not falling off the week after generally. We're then coming back the week after and going again. So the poor performances are still few and far between, and they're always going to be there, aren't they? I think that's something we have to sort of accept that, you know, I think about that Quinn's home game when we, you know, it was a massive game. We were filling the stadium to try and get people in and get people sporting, and we just were rubbish. And as a result, we lost the game. But then we came back and built up a bit more of a run of form. So, yeah, I'm not massively concerned overall. I think it's sort of a feature of where we are as a squad. But then I do caveat that with it's a limitation of we're never going to win a Premiership or go far in Europe when we've got this kind of, not issue, but, you know, when we can't do the hard yards, because you'll get to 20 minutes in a knockout game where you really need to buckle down and not concede. And I think we just, you know, give away points or, you know, just not lose our heads, but just not quite have the experience and the nous that other teams maybe do, which is fine because, you know, we're not asking to be the greatest team in history. I think we've got to be really happy with where we are. But if we want to win titles, we need to be winning those second halves against Newcastle, I think, is my take on it.
Yeah, so with that in mind then, is there anything specific you want to address from that Newcastle game? Or are you quite happy to kind of talk about the more positive aspects of the last week, which is obviously such a resounding win against Leicester?
Yeah, I'd quite like to talk about the Leicester game, unless you've got anything on the Newcastle game. Yeah, we've all had Christmas since Newcastle, haven't we? So the details are probably a bit hazier than they would have otherwise. But it's almost a feature of it. I can't really remember that much from it. It just sort of was like, it was a decent first half. And then the second half, to be honest, I haven't been able to bring myself to rewatch to even, you know. I go, well, we're not going to score any points, so what's the point of me watching this?
Yeah. I kind of said my kind of key thoughts on it earlier, which is, you know, this was a banana skin game. You've got it on the calendar. It's 2 days before Christmas, like you said, going away to Newcastle, which can be a tough place to go. But ultimately, the result and the way things transpired, it wasn't a banana skin performance. It was just we took our foot off the gas 2 days before Christmas in the second half, and credit to Newcastle for winning it. So I want to kind of come back to the point that you made a little bit earlier, which is about the resilience that we're showing as a team and how we're bouncing back and how we've gone literally from that performance 1 week to probably our best performance of the season in completely demolishing a Leicester team, which I think the thing I want to kind of focus on, and I want to get your thoughts on, Alex, is when you watch that Leicester game back, obviously, they never really fired a shot at us. And there's a couple of reasons for that. The first is in the first sort of 10, 15 minutes, they were kicking for the corner rather than kicking points, even when they had us under a bit of pressure. You can, you know, we can argue whether or not it was the right decision or not. There's then obviously a period in the sort of later first half where it's a pretty 50-50 game, but we're kind of getting game line dominance. You know, we're performing dominant tackles. We're kind of winning the collision area and really kind of preventing them from building any momentum. And then you kind of have the second half writ large, which is by the end of the game, they've got like Jack Van Poortvliet playing at 10. They, you know, have lost a couple of their centres, a couple of their outside backs. Freddie Burns comes on at one point onto the wing, and then he actually has to come off with an injury. So they have Gabriel Ogri, who's a hooker, playing in the centres by the end. One of those kind of performances which actually, once you start to dig into the detail, you're like, okay, I can understand why we scored 40 points and Leicester scored 5 when they had, you know, 2 out of their starting 7 backs still on the pitch by the end of the game. But I guess that's the kind of thing that I want to get your opinion on, which is the reason that we win that game because of the fact Leicester were never in a position to, you know, put together an attacking effort because of those injuries to the back line? Or do we win that game because of what we said earlier, which is the resolute defence right at the beginning of the game, the, you know, kind of full match game line dominance, and actually our own attacking play? What's kind of the key factor there for such a resounding win?
Yeah, I don't think you can not acknowledge that those injuries that Leicester had. I think that made it really, really tough for them, and meant that once they were behind, they were never going to come back because they had to play a sort of style of rugby, open the game up, and they just didn't really have the players on the pitch to do that. Not even in a capability way, just they didn't have the people who played in those positions to do it properly, you know. So I think you can't sort of not acknowledge that. But what I do think is that had we conceded a couple of tries early on, it would have been a much closer game. And I think Leicester could have found a way to win that game. The scoreline, I don't think the scoreline flattered us, but I think the real heavy points of the scoreline came later on in the game once it was over as a contest. So I think that we have to acknowledge that kind of those players missing, but I think there's so much hard work that went into that at the start, you know, the Maul defence to repel Leicester and keep them out. And it sort of changed their mentality and meant they had to go, oh, well, we've just been beaten up in the Maul. And instead of going, right, let's just take 3 points and get out of it and kick our way to win this game, it seemed to spur them on to kind of go, well, if we're going to win this game, we need to score a try. And if we need to score a try, we have to go to the corner. And they kind of circled the drain a bit and just kept repeating the same mistake over and over. And I think we've got to give a lot of credit to our defence on that, because this was still a very good Leicester side. You know, when we saw the lineup, I remember thinking, and I think most Celtic fans did, blimey, that's a good lineup. That's, you know, Leicester coming back to full strength. Andre Pollard at 10. You know, Youngs and Van Poortvliet as your 9 combination. Dan Kelly, who was one of their best players last year by a country mile, coming back into the side after a long layoff with injury. You know, this was a team that you thought they could do some damage to us. So I think, yeah, I think the second half and the end of the game, you can definitely point to those Leicester injuries as the reason that we were able to score a bit more freely. I mean, Simon McIntyre's try that put it kind of not out of sight, but it was the most comfortable moment after that try, I think, wasn't it? Manu Tuilagi runs around Freddie Burns, who can't walk. So, you know, that try doesn't necessarily get scored in against a fully fit and firing 15 players if the fullback can, you know, can run, which Freddie Burns couldn't, bless him. It's a valiant effort, but, you know, there was just so much space for Manu. But I think we earned that kind of right to score those points later on through really, really good play. And I do think it was a really good performance. You know, taking out the kind of Leicester element of it and their injuries and stuff, I was saying to one of my mates, who's Leicester fan, I said, the problem is that even if you'd not have those injuries, I think we were just playing really well. We were in front of a big crowd at home in our kind of big festive fixture. You were going to really struggle to win the game anyway, because we did execute really accurately. We played really good rugby. I mean, Tomo Fahati's try is majestic. I think the BT Sport commentators almost got a bit excited about it. He didn't quite get excited about it in the end, but if Harlequins had scored that try, they'd be going absolutely bananas. You know, it was brilliant rugby. The pass from Sam James is immense, which I think, in fairness, was pointed out on commentary. You know, Reid's pace, the offload from Reid to O'Flaherty, just the kind of presence of mind and awareness to get that ball away. So I think, you know, and we'd built a 9-point lead at that point, or whatever it was, I think it was 9 points, wasn't it, through taking our penalties and taking our chances. And it was just a really professional performance that, you know, effectively, having, if we hadn't given away an intercept try, we'd have nilled Leicester. And I think that still takes a lot of doing. That's not, you know, because they've got injuries. That's serious hard work in defence and dominating possession and territory, you know, not giving them a chance to come back into the game. You know, kicking well, kicking cleverly, and forcing them into, you know, I mean, there was one time, I think it was in the second half, or maybe it was in the first half, I can't remember, but Leicester was sort of passing it out the back. And in one phase, they went backwards about 25 yards because we cut off the 13's options. So he didn't really know what to do. And then he got hit and just taken back about another 5 yards by maybe Sam James and one of the Curries. You know, it's just, I think there was, Leicester had no answer to what we were offering in defence and very little answer to what we offered in attack. And we executed really accurately, which is what we struggled to do against Newcastle, I think. And that's the difference for me, that we did just genuinely play very well in that Leicester game. And yeah, there's the caveat of all their injuries. But I think if we played like that, even if Leicester had turned up with their strongest team, given the fact we were at home in front of a big crowd and playing that well, I think we'd have won the game anyway. We'd have just had to, because we really, really deserved to win that game by a big margin. And obviously we did, but I think it definitely showed what we... It was some of the best we've played all season, I think.
I think the really exciting thing about this Leicester result, like you have alluded to, is it's the consistency across the team and the variety of ways in which we were the better team and dominant. You know, we were better defensively. We were sharper in attack. We were more varied with what we were doing. We won the kicking duel, you know, for the most part. You know, when you look at, you know, three or four occasions where Leicester kick out on the full and that doesn't, you know, that didn't happen to us. I thought the way Gus Waugh and Rob Dupree kind of managed the game, again, against a pretty experienced pair in you know, either Van Poffley and Pollard, or as the game went on, obviously Ben Youngs was on. You know, you saw kind of just kind of almost 1 through 15, our players just performing better, and whether or not that was, you know, sort of clarity of thought and decision making, whether or not it was like preciseness with passing or kicking, whether or not that was just in terms of like physicality, you know, to a man, we were the better team. And I think the really exciting thing is, you know, this was a good Leicester team. You know, injuries aside, for the first 30 minutes or so, this was a Leicester team that won the league last year, for the most part. And so, you know, to weather a bit of an early storm and kind of consistently keep them out, and then when the game starts to just turn in our favour, actually act opportunistically to, you know, make the most of our entries into the 22, which I thought we did really well, or just kind of control territory and win a kicking duel. Just these little moments just really add up. And that when you add those all together with, you know, a bit of incisive play and heads up rugby, which leads to our Flaherty's try, takes on 16-0 at half time. All of a sudden the pressure goes on to Leicester, like you were saying, and they're playing catch up, and that's going right into our hands. And to be honest, it would be for into the hands of any Premiership team. Once it's so much easier to play once you've got a lead. So, you know, it's just kind of tick, tick, tick. And, from all aspects. And, you know, I've pulled up the stats here as well, just to kind of, you know, highlight some of those kind of key talking points. You know, possession wise, 58-42 for Sale, territory 58-42 to Sale. It just speaks to the fact that we were just able to play the game in the right areas of the pitch and control where that game was being played. Clean breaks, 11-2 for in Sale's favour. Defenders beaten 23-1. So Leicester only were able to beat one defender the entire match, which is, again, a testament to just how airtight our defence has been. So if you're doing the maths in your head at home, listeners, Sale's tackle success rate, 88 tackles attempted, 87 made, one missed, 98.86 tackle success rate. Like, just incredible numbers. And, you know, if you're a Leicester team that's been, you know, maybe a little bit up and down this year, you're not going to do anything against a team that's making 99% of all their tackles, no matter how good you are, whether or not you're in a purple patch, whether or not you're struggling. Like, Sale just completely shut the game down. And it was just so impressive, kind of, to a man, how good we were. So, yeah, I mean, plenty of positives. You know, I think, you know, if you wanted to pick out, you know, Tom O'Flaherty's try as being an example of the heads of rugby we're playing, Simon McIntyre's try, a really good example of how, once we got a bit of possession, a bit of momentum, we actually looked unstoppable. We put together some really good consecutive phases to get near the try line and ultimately go over. You know, we went about 30 metres in that span. You know, that was a highlight. But I guess there's a couple of highlights that I do want to talk about, Alex. And I guess it kind of starts and probably ends with Sam James, who put in a man of the match performance, even before we set up one of the tries towards the end of the game. And I guess, you know, my question to you is, Sam James is in a particularly rich vein of form at the moment, but how much does he elevate this Sale team? You know, when you look at everything we've just spoken about, without him in the team, we still probably beat that Leicester team. But is Sam James the reason why we're beating that Leicester team by 35 points rather than 10 or 15?
I think he's a massive factor in it. I think what he offers at 13 is something we haven't really got from anyone else. And he just fits into our system so well. And the calmness he has on the ball to make the right decision is really, really impressive at such a top level of rugby. You know, I think I was watching back the Ulster game from the other week, just as an example, and there's one where we sort of play it out the back. He gets the ball, he looks up, scans the pitch, sees there's nothing on wide, sees there's space in behind, and puts a chip in into their 22. And I think we end up, it's a line out, can't remember who for, in the 22. But it's just a really good bit of play. And when I watched the Ulster game back, I remember thinking he had loads of time to make that decision. It looked like in the stadium, I thought, yeah, he looked like he had loads of time. So it's a good decision. But honestly, he gets the ball and, you know, it's kicked within a second and a half. And it's just that speed of thought that I think again was on show against Leicester. For, you know, seeing what's on and making the right call and making the pass. There's the BT Sport highlighted the kind of draw and pass against Chris Ashton, which sent us off down the pitch for a break. But even the pass to Aaron Reid for O'Flaherty's try, the first try, it's the way he gets the ball, sees what's on, sees where the space is, but then fires out an absolutely beautiful pass, you know, just straight away. And it's that, I think it's that speed that he offers and that rugby intelligence that you don't get if you play other players in that position to the same extent, because he is just so aware of where the game needs to be played and how to kind of get into the right positions. So I thought it was a really impressive performance. I think he looks back to, you know, I think this is getting towards the best we've ever seen him. I was going to say back to his best, but I can't remember, you know, when, a time of being this good and all-rounded. And I think the team is set up to help him with that. I think having Dupreeer at 10, you know, playing consistently, Gus War at 9 playing consistently has really helped him. It makes it easier as a 13 to kind of know what the patterns are going to look like. And I do think a lot of credit has to go to the rest of the team as well to kind of set up and create that space in the 13 channel for him to operate. Because you look at the way we play now with those one out behind the back balls, everyone's doing them. You know, Simon McIntyre's going up and pulling them out the back. Ross Harrison's doing it. You know, everyone's able to step up and perform that role. And that's holding the defence. And then Rob Dupree is playing really well and making the right decision in when to pass to Sam Jones, when not. And I do think all of that kind of hard work in the centre of the field is making it very easy for Sam James, because he's got time on the ball and then he's showing his quality to kind of create the opportunities and make the right decisions and, you know, back up positive play with more positive play. So I certainly think he's being given the tools by the team to execute and perform to the level he currently is. But that's not to take anything away from, he's been one of our best players for the last few weeks, I think. Ulster and Leicester, both games just looked imperious and deserved man of the match in both, to be honest, I think. So, yeah, I think you can't kind of downplay enough how good he's been the last couple of weeks. And that Leicester game is just, it was exactly his sort of game. It was, you know, but you could see all his skills. It gave him a chance to show how talented a footballer he is generally, you know, just in all areas of the game. So, yeah, I can't speak highly enough of Sam James, actually. I think it's been brilliant. And, you know, we'll go on to talk about other players, but another word on Luke as well, coming back in from injury and looking straight back up to form. But I think Sam and Luke also play really well together. There's, you know, obviously it's always difficult with brothers on the same pitch, but I really do think that Sam brings out the best in Luke and vice versa when they're both playing well. They're both sort of, you know, getting each other better and better and better. So it's really positive for Sale. Obviously, you know, we've got a good competition at 15 now when Joe Carpenter's back from injury as well. But Sam James is nailed down that 13 shirt for me. That's, if we are going into a Premiership final now, he's getting towards first name on the team sheet, I think, from my perspective. I'm not sure whether that's being massively hyperbolous or not, but it does feel like he just offers something so unique at 13 that you kind of have to go, we need you in our squad to play the way we play, to defend the way we defend, to attack the way we attack, and to kick territory the way we do. And I'm sorry, I've not even mentioned the fact that he's one of the best kickers to touch off penalties in the league. He's been absolutely brilliant at that as well. So it's just, yeah, I'll never run out of positives about Sam James at the moment, it seems.
I think one thing I've kind of noticed as well, and this might be a bit spurious, it might be a bit difficult to kind of do a firm link between the two, but you look at the form in which Sam James is sort of discovered and tie that into George Ford's arrival at the club, and the obvious impact Ford is having on the way we're playing. And, you know, you saw him on the touchline in Alex Sanderson's ear. This is George Ford I'm referring to. Talking tactics and talking, you know, configurations of you know, where players should be and whatnot. And you always looked at someone like Sam James with the natural skills he has. He's a fantastic footballer. He's, you know, pretty solid defensively. He's got a decent turn of pace. You know, he's a real sort of five-tool player. And, you know, for the last couple of years, there was a feeling that he was sort of plateauing. And I know I've said it on this podcast quite a lot about, if he was in a Toulouse, for example, or a Clermont or whoever, you know, would you actually start to see him reach another level because of the players that he's around and you know, the role that he would have to fill on a team with different players around him? And it's really interesting because it does feel like having someone like George Ford, who is a sort of a player's player and almost like another coach on the field, it is interesting to kind of see an extra level that Sam James seems to be hitting at the moment, particularly in his playmaking skills and the passes he makes and the fact, you know, he picked up, you know, he's picking up try assists now at the rate that he was a few years ago when he was playing more centrally at 10, you know, for that brief spell, or when he was the focal point in that midfield alongside Danny Cipriani, for example. So it's just really interesting to kind of see that evolution in Sam James's game. It's really interesting. I was going to mention Luke James as well. Came straight back into the team and had a really strong performance. Just so solid. Decision-making is fantastic. And that counter-attacking ability that we knew he had, but is born more of the fact he's such a good decision-maker rather than any sort of natural athleticism. I think is really interesting because you look at the line break he made as a counter attack midway through the second half, I believe it was. That just comes because there's a 2-on-1. He dummies the pass, and all of a sudden there's a massive hole in the Leicester defense. He just runs straight through it. That's not because he's quicker or stronger or more powerful than anyone else. That's because he just knows how to manipulate a defense and make the right decision to hold on to the ball. I just saw, you know, time after time instances like that on his return to action. And again, you wonder if Sam James is in a particularly strong vein of form, what impact is that having on Luke? And again, is this an area where George Ford and maybe Paul Deacon, because of the players that we've now got, is having another impact, having a similar impact on Luke James to also take him to another level? I don't know, but it's really encouraging to see them playing so well together. And like you said, it's only going to be better for the club when Joe Carpenter comes back, because now we've got two genuine options at 15, which, you know, even 18 months ago, we were talking about that being the problem position for Sale. The one final thing on the Leicester game, then, before we move on to previewing the Harlequins game, Alex, is Joe Simpson, who obviously it was announced would be retiring from professional rugby a couple of weeks ago. He played his final game, not just for Sale, but as a professional rugby player on Friday night. And I just kind of wanted to get your, you know, quick thoughts on Joe Simpson. First of all, just as a player, but also, you know, what he sort of meant to Sale for the 6 months that he's been at the club as a veteran player who's kind of come in on a short-term contract to kind of help steer this club actually to be in the position that they are at the moment, which is second in the league and really pushing for a top four and a title tilt.
Yeah, I think as a player, I think I can't sort of speak highly enough of what he did, you know, in that period, maybe 5 or 6 years ago, when he really was one of the best scrum halves in England, and there were rightly calls for him to be called up to the England squad, and I think he was always on the fringe of it, without ever suffering from Eddie Jones's stubborn insistence on picking Ben Youngs every week, but Premiership level he was absolutely bossing it day in, day out. So I think he's been a brilliant player, obviously very much associated with Wasps and that style of play, and that really good Wasp team that, you know, there was with LaRue and, you know, they were bringing in really high-quality players.
Kelly Beale,
yeah.
Yep.
You forget how many good players Wasps had over the years. And so I think, yeah, he's been a brilliant player, and I think what's sort of shown at Sale is that not only is he a brilliant player, but he's clearly a very good rugby man based on how popular he's become in such a short space of time. You know, he only joined the squad in July, August time, so, you know, a relatively late pickup. And he's just, you can tell from the respect from the squad and the team and everyone around the club on and off the field that he's been a really positive character to have in the club. So I think that's been a really nice kind of nice thing to see and a nice personality to bring into the club. And clearly the club have been very good with deep kind of dealing with that retirement, so to speak. You know, we've done all the right things in terms of putting out statements and, you know, it just feels all very positive. I look back to the days when, you know, we barely even acknowledged when some of our best players retired as a club. You know, you can sense the shift in priorities and feeling, and it just reinforces all that good stuff that the club have been doing off the field recently. And I think on the field, the performances of the best thing about Joe Simpson this season for me has been the performances of Gus Waugh, because there must be some credit to go to Joe Simpson in that area from how well Gus Waugh's been playing. And I think it's a bit ironic that it's been then Gus keeping Joe out of the team. It's you know, sort of the student has become the master in a way. But what Joe's offered is a real kind of quality, calm and clear head off the bench that has been really needed, because obviously Raffi's been injured, Will Cliff's been injured. So, you know, we've needed a scrum half to come in and step up, and he's been such a high quality addition to that bench in terms of, you know, nous and knowledge and experience in the game, all those things I was talking about with the Newcastle game before that maybe part of the squad is lacking, we are making up for in other parts. And I think Joe Simpson is one of them who's done it at, you know, a really high level for a really long time, and therefore, you know, knows how to manage games and knows how to see out results when needed or inject a bit of pace when needed. So I think he's kind of, you know, no doubt Gus War has set up a lot of victories this season, but Joe Simpson's seen off quite a lot of them and finished them off. And I think we will probably miss him more than we kind of realise at the moment. At the moment, I think we're very much, you know, yeah, this is, you know, it's all very positive and it's been really nice and it's a really good way to go out. You know, obviously having the attempted conversion as his last act in rugby after the great try assist is, it's quite nice. Shame he didn't land it. But, yeah, I think it'll be interesting to see how we then go in, you know, as we come into this Quins game and into the rest of the games this season, missing that kind of experience and that just that depth in the squad. You know, it's obviously a big boots to fill for whoever comes in off the bench, because I think he's brought a real, really good energy and a really good level of experience and guidance for a lot of players in the squad. So, yeah, I think we have to be really appreciative to Joe Simpson. Obviously, you know, it goes both ways. I think the club has been very good to him and he's been very good to the club. So I think it just feels like one of those quite positive stories. He's not been here that long, but if there was a genuine kind of warmth and a nice feeling around the ground after the game. And yeah, I think it just reflects on, obviously, what a good guy Joe Simpson is, but also what a good place this club has become to kind of come and play. And you know, even if it's just for 6 months, you'll get, you know, a warm send off. And it's it definitely feels like we've come a long way in that area, I think. And Joe Simpson is just one example of that. So it all feels very positive to me, I think. I don't know if you've got any other thoughts.
No, I think you've kind of covered it off very well there. You know, it is interesting that we were, I think, the third club in the space of about a year for Joe Simpson, and the writing was very much on the wall that he was coming to the end of his career. I think he's had a nice little sort of 6 month period here with us able to kind of not be too reliant on him to be playing sort of major minutes. He's obviously had a number of starts for sale, but has been able to kind of almost mentor Gus War, and as you've said, probably had a positive effect on his playing style, and obviously being able to alleviate the minutes that Wars had to play by coming off the bench. And, you know, it was, we said it at the time, it's just sort of a classic, you know, low risk, low reward sort of signing for sale. You know, worst case scenario, it doesn't work out, and you know, it doesn't really make any difference in the scheme of things. Best case scenario, he did what he, you know, has done, which is provides a bit of, you know, depth and rotation off the bench. And obviously with Raffi coming back from injury, but then having another injury sustained, he's been a valuable insurance policy. We obviously haven't seen Will Cliff this year. So whether or not that, again, that speaks to the fact that Cliff might be on the way back. We know Raffi Quirk's on the way back, and maybe a deal wasn't offered to extend Simpson's contract. I don't know, but you know, it sounds like it's probably come from a mutual perspective, the decision to move on. And I think he's been kind of exactly what you want for when you're signing a 34-year-old scrum half in August before the season. So, you know, I think he's been a fantastic player just across his career. He's always been a player that I know I personally enjoyed watching, especially at WASS when he used to dovetail with Dan Robson as well. You know, the that kind of rangy, very quick off the mark scrum half always had a place in the Premiership. And even if he didn't have that, he's obviously brought a lot of experience and a lot of nous to what has been at times a very young Sale team. So I think he's been a great pickup, and yeah, just a shame he wasn't able to nail that touchline conversion. They shouldn't have let him do it. They should have just let his final acts in Premiership Rugby to be the try assist, because it's a fantastic pick and pass. But anyway, it was nice to see a little bit of fun kind of happen at the end of a blowout win, and it's a nice sort of thoughtful thing, especially on a New Year's Eve game or thereabouts. But with that in mind, obviously Joe Simpson won't be part of the Sale team for their next game. We are continuing with Premiership Rugby action, as Sale will be playing Harlequins next on Sunday afternoon. So as we record this pod, it is Sunday morning in the UK, which means Harlequins have yet to actually play the round 11 game against Northampton. That's due to take place later this afternoon. So in the meantime, we only have a slightly smaller sample of data to go off to preview what to expect from Harlequins. But it's been a bit of a strange year for Harlequins in a lot of respects. They currently sit third in the table and are currently very much vying with Sale for that second place behind Saracens. So as of recording, Saracens are top with 48 points, Sale are second on 38 points, and Quins are third on 31 points, being 1 point ahead of Gloucester in fourth. That is, however, with the condition that Harlequins have obviously played a game fewer, and if they are able to beat Northampton today, they will end up being a lot closer to second than they are to fourth. So it's felt like Quins have been very much in the kind of leaders of the chasing pack alongside Sale, obviously following Saracens so far this season. But actually, it's been a slightly up and down campaign for the team from Southwest London so far this year. In classic Quins fashion, they are currently the third highest scoring team in the league based on tries scored. They've scored 37, so the same as Sale, albeit with the game a game fewer played, and that's seven behind Saracens. But they've also been sort of struggling to fire on all cylinders, and I think it's fair to say that Quins are actually a little bit fortunate to be so clearly established as the third place team this year, given that some of their performances have left a lot to be desired. So even just looking at the last 4 weeks of games, they lost at home to Bristol on Tuesday the 27th as part of a makeup game, 15 points to 12, a game that's obviously been notably picked up by Sale fans as the result of a AJ McGinty tap tackle on Andreas De Hazen as a match winner. But the week before that, they were able to beat that kind of Harlem Globetrotters Racing 92 side 14 points to 10 in the Champions Cup. And then the week before that, they travelled down to Durban in South Africa to play the other Sharks team and got beat 39-31. So mixed fortunes in the Champions Cup. And the week before that, when they were back in Premiership action, they beat Bath 19 points to 13. So hopefully I've been able to paint a bit of a pattern here, which is this Quins team in the last month alone has won two, lost two. In the game, they've won some close games, they've lost some close games, and they've also had a bit of a hammering away at the Sharks in South Africa. And one of the kind of things that's really started to stick out with this Quins team is the absence of Marcus Smith, which actually correlates quite neatly to some slightly below par, offensive showing. So in their last two Premiership Rugby games, for example, Quins have scored 31 points. Hardly the sort of performance you'd expect from a team that's built on a very attacking mentality. And it kind of speaks again to the fact that earlier on in the season, when this team was maybe closer to full health, they were scoring a lot of tries, even in losing efforts, such as the game where they were beaten away at Sandy Park against Exeter. But this Quins team, we know, can score tries. That's evident from their position in the table, but they're not really scoring a lot of points to go alongside of it. And so you have this very weird duality with Quins at the moment, where they are a team that is performing pretty well, and have certainly racked up enough points earlier on in the season, but aren't necessarily firing on all cylinders, which makes the proposition of going down to the Stoop to face Quins a bit of an interesting one for Sale. Whether or not Marcus Smith will be back, we're not sure at this stage. I'm not sure if he's playing today. I should probably check that very quickly. But this is a team that is very similar to the one that won the league 2 years ago, but is yet to sort of find the same form and kind of kick on to become part of that true title challenger again this year, in a way that Saracens and to an extent Sale have been as well. So with that all said, Alex, kind of, you know, what are you expecting from Quins on this coming Sunday? Because as I've hopefully managed to outline there, this is a team that will still score, you know, 3 tries against you, but will also only score 19 points in the game. So what can we expect from this team?
Yeah, it's really hard to know what to expect, isn't it? It's the difficult question of, are they going to turn up and, you know, suddenly find form again? I do think you're right. I think they must have been missing Marcus Smith. I think obviously Tommy Allen's a very good player, but he's not Marcus Smith. And he's also not quite... Marcus Smith is so... His DNA is basically Quinn's DNA. It's why he struggled for England. It's why he is so good for Harlequins, because he fits into that system so brilliantly. And I don't think Tommy Allen quite fits in as perfectly, despite the fact he's still a very good player. So that's kind of one interesting quirk. But then you sort of know that Esthuizen is going to carry hard. You know that Joe Marchant's going to be very creative. You know Caden Murley is a brilliant winger, and he's probably going to score a try at some point because he's in such good form and so powerful and strong and quick. But then I think where we kind of need to get the superiority on Quins, which is easier said than done, is up front. And, you know, if we can use our... I think we've got a better pack of forwards on our day than Quins do currently. It's just gaining that kind of genuine dominance up front and in areas like the scrum and the line out, but also the breakdown. You know, Quins can be a massive threat at the breakdown and kind of win quick turnovers and launch attacks off that. So I think we can expect that Quins will throw it around and try and score tries. We can expect it to be they'll try and keep the pace of the game high and, you know, be taking quick lineouts and that kind of thing. It'll probably look like we're trying to slow the game down, which we sort of will be. But as you say, I think if ever there was a time you wanted to go and visit the Stoop when you needed to beat Quins, it feels like it's not the worst time, because Marcus Smith isn't fully fit and firing. I mean, you know, they've still got Danny Kerr playing very, very well, albeit I think he's on the bench this weekend for the Northampton game.
He is, yeah.
But I think Danny Kerr's the main worry, because if he's on, and he will be, because he'll be at the Stoop, he'll start, and if he can run the game, then I think that's where Quins could have us, because he's still playing so well, however old he is now. But I do think we have to be positive about this Quins game and kind of look at it and go, we're coming off a great result against Leicester. We've got way more rest time than Quins have had. So there is a really good opportunity to get a win at the Stoop, but it's just such a hard thing to do, isn't it? It's such a tough place to go, because Quins will play really well. They sell out the Stoop every week that they play, so they'll have a big crowd behind them. I think it's going to be a tough ask. But yeah, I've not really answered your question there, but I don't really know the answer, because I don't know what to expect. I don't know whether, you know, Danny Kerr's going to start and be on fire, or Danny Kerr's going to be on the bench and it's just going to be a bit more of a regulation Quins team, if such a thing exists. We know we'll concede a couple of tries, which I think our best performances come when we don't concede any tries, so that's a bit of a worry. But I do think they're there for the taking, and I think we have nothing to fear going into this Quins game, and a massive opportunity to kind of re-establish that buffer between second and third, if we can. But Yeah, as I say, easier said than done, that, isn't it?
Yeah, no, absolutely. And Quins are a team, more so, I think, than any other team in the league, that are defined by their talismanic players. You know, like you said, if Danny Kerr's on, this team fires. If he's not, they can struggle. Marcus Smith isn't playing, or hasn't been named to play against Northampton today. The prognosis on his injury is that it's going to be out to the new year. If he's not playing, or if he's coming off the bench, that's a massive plus in Sale's favour. And you do look at, you know, Will Evans got knocked out of the game pretty early on against Bristol, you know, who's a very disruptive player at flanker and has had some very good games against Sale in the past. So all of a sudden, you know, if you look at, okay, Marcus Smith isn't playing, and if, you know, Danny Kerr this weekend is on the bench, and Lewis Jeltema, a player I've not heard of before, but he's signed from North Harbour for Quins ahead of this year. If Kerr's carrying a knock, or if he's, you know, in a rest and rotation period, to be honest, playing, not starting away at Northampton is a bit of a surprise, and probably points to maybe a knock, or maybe not being fully match fit. But if you don't have Danny Kerr, if you don't have Marcus Smith, if you don't have someone like Will Evans, who I think is a really effective player for them, that changes things massively, because as good as Andre Esterhazen is, he's not the sort of five-tool player who can win a game single-handedly for you in a way that those other players can. One other thing to mention, you know, they picked up Josh Bassett from Wasps, and he's, you know, continued to be a very effective Premiership winger. You know, you go through their back line with Bassett, Murley and David, who joined from Worcester over the summer. They've got some very, very impressive backs, as you would expect. Joe Marchant has moved back to 13, having been playing on the wing the last couple of years. They've got a back line that can score tries from anywhere, which we've seen in the last couple of years. So you never really want to count this Quins team out. But when you look at the form that they're playing in, particularly since, you know, Marcus Smith's gone down with injury, this is a team that, you like I said earlier, they might score three tries, but only score 19 points. And actually, I think what we saw from Sale against Leicester, which is the first two times we got into their 22, we kicked, the first three times we got into their 22, we kicked three penalties and took a 9-0 lead, and all of a sudden had our own game-breaking players to take us out to a 16-point lead at the half. That could be enough against this Quins team, and I think that's the really exciting thing about where both teams are in respect of each other at the moment. So, Alex, I guess with all that said, I mean, there's probably not much to say from a team selection point of view. I think it's realistically, we know what our best team is at the moment. So, assuming everyone is fit and we can kind of roll it back from the Leicester game, what's your score prediction for Sunday?
I feel quite good about this one, weirdly, which is worrying if you're a Sale fan, because I'm rubbish at predictions. But I think Sale are going to win, and I think it's going to be relatively comfortable. So I'm going to say Sale 23, Harlequins 14. I'm positive, which is a very new feeling for me. But yeah, go well, lads. Yeah, 23-14 Sale.
I'm in the same position. I've got Sale 27, Harlequins 19. I think it'll probably be three tries apiece, but Sale will just have the ability to squeeze out a couple of penalties, you know, and they'll use that to build a bit of a lead that'll be able to, ride to a win. So hopefully when we next record an episode of the podcast, we'll be vindicated by being extra positive this week. But obviously, you know, if Harlequins hang 50 points on Northampton at Franklin's Gardens this afternoon, well, we might have to revise those predictions. But until then, we'll stick with the positivity. So that's the podcast for this week. Thank you so much to everyone for listening. We hope everyone had a lovely Christmas and New Year period. And hope everyone is looking forward to another calendar year of the pod in 2023. So that's everything from my side. Alex, anything from you before we say goodbye?
No, just to wish everyone a very happy new year. And yeah, let's hope 2023 is as good to Sale as 2022 seems to have been so far. So yeah, looking forward to hopefully some interesting and exciting games, and maybe even a semi-final or a final later in the season. Who knows? But yeah, feeling very optimistic for Sale going into the new year. So happy new year.